We're looking at the life of Joseph today. So we're in the middle of our sermon series in Acts. Today's a little bit of a commercial break, but I want to, there's been so much going on, I want to still ask us the question as we look at the early church and as Jesus designed it to be, have we drifted? Has the church at large drifted around the world? Has the church in America drifted? And then we have to ask ourselves, as UBC, as the way we do church, how we do church, have we drifted? And then we think personally, in our walk, in my walk, in your walk with Jesus, have we drifted from the core values that Jesus set, the truth that he set, and how we function and how we do? In other words, if we find ourselves operating horizontally more than vertically or horizontally first. In other words, how I approach my job, how I approach my marriage, how I approach my friendships, how I approach church, how I approach different types of things. If I do that first, then try to fit God into it, I think I've got it backwards. So vertically, as a church and personally, that we would seek God and through His lens, through His perspective, that we would then approach our work. And through His lens and His perspective, we would approach our marriage. And through His lens and His perspective, we'd approach our friends and all the other platforms that God provides for us. So have we drifted? We are doing our best to stay relevant, to answer the call to bridge the gospel in East Orlando and beyond. And so I told you, I'm going to try to have as many stories as I can or show as many pictures and pick up on things on the activity of the church at large or even us here at UBC. That, you know, are we active? Are we in motion answering God's call? So church at large, maybe an implication or a stretch here. I don't think anything's random. So anybody watch the spelling bee? The winner. Okay, I got a picture for you on the screen here. The winner of the spelling bee. Anybody remember the winning word? Koinonia, which means what, Tim? That's right. Real Bible fellowship and real, authentic, genuine community. And so that just creates a buzz. And so we as Christians, a lot of people, what in the world does koinonia mean? Well, now we'll be able to tell them what it means and then how to have real Bible, biblical community and fellowship. Now, here's a picture of Gene. Wanted to show you this. So they've been praying about, at this stage in this season in their life, they've already adopted two, and now this would be an unexpected adoption, but they've been praying for it, I believe, for months. And so this baby was born early this morning, at some point before we all got up. So they took off last night. He was supposed to be here, like I said earlier, to graduate and to walk. But they took off and they did that. And we're giving them grace on that. So that is awesome. And I just love, you know, you think about the example of this family saying, you know what, we're going to do this all again, starting right from infancy with a little baby. You talk about answering a call of God, or you talk about, you know, taking on a God-sized challenge. And it being a surprise and a new opportunity for them. So we praise God for their example. We'll just make sure you pray for them in that process and as they travel home and everything else. And He'll update us on everything when He returns. We wanted to show you, here's a picture of one of our parents receiving that where their kids go to Bonnyville. And this picture of this promotional card that says Back to School Bash. And so UBC, so what we're trying to do on August the 17th is we're trying to meet our community where they are. And so we're not doing adventure camps this summer for several reasons. And one of those is to put all our energy to meet them where they are and to help any way that we can. And by doing that, also bridging gospel. And so showing God's love in practical ways. And so what's really awesome about this is through relationship that's been built, these cards were allowed to go home in a public school situation, I think to over 500 students this past week. And so we're able to now praying that the dots would connect as that goes home with the students, that the parents would actually look at the student stuff. And listen, half the time, I don't think I do as a parent, and I'm a teacher. But they would get into their backpacks and get into their folders and see this. And it may connect the dot as they see the sign out here. Thank you, Kim, for and Melissa and all your team for the graduation Sunday today. But also all the things that you're doing throughout the week. And she's got that sign up months early, about August 17th. So as cars go by and traffic goes by, they can prepare for the school year, knowing that we could come alongside them. So we want to show God's love in a practical way. So that's some breakthroughs here. Here's another breakthrough within, you know, you may say, I don't know. That's not the picture I'm looking for. Are we still in my, make sure you're still in my sermon content, because I'm not sure about that. But I do want to tell you about this. When you talk about, okay, Pastor, wait a second. So we're going to have another giveaway. We're going to have, where are we going to store the stuff? We're out of space. So where are we going to store it? And so we talked about having a room in the budget for building a shed or some sort of storage, something to help us with multiple opportunities. Well, as you know, I work at the Master's Academy. And last week, we were told that we're going to build a new building over there. And we have a couple of mobile units. Those are going to be demolished, getting rid of, trashed. And then they're going to build a new building. So when I heard that, yeah, here's the mobile units right here. And so I said, oh, wait a second. Time out. Went and talked to the president after. I said, would it be possible that a church or my church could use these mobile? If you're just going to get rid of them, I think we could use these. Said, let me go check and find out. Has to go through the details. And then says, you know what? Yes. If your church can move them. These are big units. If you can get them from TMA to here, and they don't fit in a pickup truck, if you can do that, you can have them. You can have all of it. By the way, I just wanted to see, there's air conditioning hookup to it, electrical, the ramps getting into it on both sides. I mean, this is a big deal. There's two of these. So you go, man, God, this is unbelievable, because one of our core values is to partner with organizations in the community, because we're stronger together. Especially other Christian organizations. So there's collaboration there that allows us to increase our capacity to answer God's call. We've been talking about it for years. Here's yet another example. Kind of like the coats, Marcia. Let's don't even start talking about the blankets yet, because, whoa, it's going to be awesome. Okay? So we're talking about another goal coming up that involves blankets, blanketing our city and bringing in blankets instead of coats. And so there's already numbers and goals being set, and we'll kind of launch that initiative in a little bit. But just want you to know that we have money in the budget. It's still not a final deal, because we have to actually go complete and execute this deal before they're demolished, and we have until Friday of this week to get it done. And so we're working with a company, and we believe it's going to happen. But just add that to your prayer request. I just wanted to celebrate that we have the money in the budget to move them. We did not know this was going to come up, but now this is going to help us in all kinds of ways, whether it be multi-use storage, classroom space, worship space, activity space, whatever it is, because these are two good size units. So we're just praising God about His activity and His movement. We have Brad here in the BCM just coming back from Cuba, and we look forward to hearing more about that, and some of the BCMers, also those that are now UBCers and now UCers, who are launching University Church. Are you with me? We're starting to have our own code language here and getting ready to launch this campus at UCF. And so we look forward to hearing about that. Again, just collaboration and partnership leading to the furthering of the gospel. And I've got kind of a fun one, and then I'm going to get on to the message. My son and I, you know, we had to get rid of the carpet in the pastorium. And so just for multiple reasons. And so we were emptying that and trying to get into the dumpster over here and just dragging it across the yard. Come on, son. This is a good workout. You know, trying to do all the things that coaches and parents try to do to motivate our young ones to help us to actually, you know, do some work where we're not paying them and things like that. but the dumpster was full. It's full. Okay, we dump it every couple of weeks. It's full. We get carpet and padding and all this stuff on it. We're trying to get it in it. And I didn't take a picture quick enough. My son's like, don't take a picture. But it was just way over full. And I thought, man, it would just, as I contacted Bill, I said, Bill, we need this to be dumped, because it's way over full. We got kids out here that right now bounce houses, doesn't look good. And we got it. And that's my fault. I should have told you, you know, that I should have helped coordinate all this. And my son and I walked back in. And all of a sudden, we hear something. And I go, Reese, Do you hear what I hear? I said, there's no way. It's got to be traffic or a truck that's doing something over here. And it got closer and closer. And I went back on the deck and I went, oh my gosh, it's the dump truck. The dump truck came almost at the same moment that we needed him. I can't even say I prayed for it. I was more concerned about it. Comes and we watch him and we do it. And my wife and they're like, why is this such a big deal? I'm like, come on, this is huge. The dump truck came. God's even taking care of the dumpster for us. If he can do that, he can take care of our situation. Do you get it? Do you see it? And I called Bill after. I said, Bill, please don't tell, because I'm having a spiritual moment right now. Please don't tell me that you called the dump truck, because that'll kill it. That'll kill my moment. Although I appreciate you doing it if you did. He said, I didn't call anybody. God's at work. He's on the move. And what I love about it is we're talking about things that happened yesterday, that last week, within the last 2 weeks, not just over the last decades. So he's still on the move. What an honor, what a privilege to be on the move with him. So today, I think it's very appropriate. Here's where we kind of get into the commercial break from the Acts series. But we're going to talk about the activity of the modern church as we launch the graduates into God's calling on their lives. Now, this is relevant not just to them. You go, okay, this is a message just for the graduates. Wait a second. We're all, I want to challenge all of us and ask the question, have you graduated into God's calling for your life? So not just literal graduates this morning, but all of us, are we in tune and are we moving towards God's goals, God's missions for you? So we're looking at graduation today, not as an end, but actually the beginning of God's gigantic plan, not just for them, but for all of us. So no matter your age, no matter your past and your circumstance from which you come from, today you can receive God's vision for your life, His plan for you, His dream for you. So we can all, in a sense, graduate today. We can all be graduates today. And so it's great to have our own goals, but this is not what we're talking about today. We're talking about God's goals for our life. We're going vertical first. We're talking about something larger than the horizontal approach to this life. God's dream for our lives. God's goals for our lives. God's vision for our lives. And so the title, you see it in your sermon notes, we're going to look at a brief case study on the life of Joseph. Well, I know it's my wife's favorite story. It's one of my favorite stories as well. Joseph, I call him the unstoppable dreamer. The unstoppable dreamer. I love this story. Graduating into God's dream for our lives. And so let's look at an overview of the life of Joseph. Joseph, we're going to move through it pretty quickly, and then we're going to draw application from it. So Joseph's story took place before the Exodus. He was the son, a son of Jacob. When his story picks up, he's 17 years old. Which makes him the youngest of all the brothers. And so what we're going to do is just kind of launch the story out of the word, and then I'm going to kind of summarize, because it covers multiple chapters, covers the life of Joseph. So Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37, I'm just going to read from verse 1, and we'll go to verse 5, and then we'll kind of summarize from there. So Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. So this is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. His father's wives and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he had made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him. And could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. And then the story continues. So Joseph's brothers were jealous of him. This is why. Because Jacob favored him more than them. Because he had him at his old age. Part of the reason. God had a special calling on his life. Part of the reason. Jacob made him a rich, ornamented, colorful robe. Didn't for the others. Part of the reason. So what was the brothers' response to this? They saw it. They observed it. Jealousy built up inside of them. And then the Bible says that they actually hated him for it. The Bible says they couldn't speak kind words to him because of their jealousy. So causing even more jealousy was that Joseph was a dreamer. Dreams, of course, being a frequent mode of God's revelation to man, especially in the Old Testament. Now we have the Bible. And so Joseph had a unique and a special relationship with God, and the brothers didn't like that. So the first set of dreams made it even worse. They were not acceptable to Joseph's brothers. And you could understand why, especially if you have siblings, and especially if you have a younger brother or sister, when you hear the message that God gave Joseph to tell the brothers. So the first dream implied what? That his brothers would bow down to him and that he would rule over them and be an authority over them. Now think about it. When your younger sibling tried to do anything for you, what did you do about it? You made sure they didn't ever do that again, did you not? Can you imagine your younger brother, younger sister, younger sibling actually including God in the message so that you're actually not only going to do this for me and do that for me, I'm going to be in so much authority over you that you're going to bow down to me. What would you do about that? So you can understand that their response in jealousy and rage and hatred, we can connect with that. So they hated him all the more. The second dream implied that his brothers, dad and mom would even bow down to him. So now the whole family would bow down. So this they continued in their jealousy. One day the brothers were out grazing Jacob's flocks at a place near Shechem. Jacob sends Joseph to look for his brothers. He eventually found them near a place called Dothan. So Joseph is approaching his brothers who are in a distant land, supposed to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. His brothers saw him coming on the horizon, and they begin to put their jealousy into action, and they develop a plot to actually kill him. So here was the plot. They said, let's get Joseph and let's throw him in this cistern, this large hole that's supposed to hold water. It's empty and it's dry. Let's just throw our younger brother that we are jealous of, although they wouldn't say that, but we hate him for all the favoritism he gets. And let's put him in the cistern. Then, what are we going to tell our father Jacob? Well, what we'll do is, guys, we'll tell him that a ferocious animal came and ate him. And what we'll probably do is add to the story, I'm ad-libbing a little bit here, that we tried to wrestle off that, whatever, fill in the blank. But we just couldn't do it, Dad. We gave her all. And then maybe, just maybe, we'll start getting some of the benefit that he received. So they were so upset about the dreams and about the favoritism. And then one of the brothers, Reuben, tries to talk his brothers out of the plot without success. Later on, we learn in chapter 42 in the story that Reuben reminds his brothers, hey guys, remember, I was the one that tried to talk you out of this. The brothers move forward with their plan. They threw him into the empty cistern and then they went off to eat. Now, they went off to eat, probably, they wouldn't admit this, but they had to be stalling. Because to execute, to actually bring their hatred to action, to end their life of their little brother, it's going to take a lot of courage to do that. And so, while they're eating and while they're off, probably hesitating, they see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming their way. And think, maybe we could leverage and maybe we could benefit more than killing our brother. Maybe we can do something else like sell him and trade him and we could get benefit from that. So these Ishmaelites were loaded with healing elements and beautifying elements, products that would make them money if they could get their hands on it. There's the benefit. So the brothers concluded that killing Joseph wouldn't get them anything in return, but selling him would. So, what'd they do? They sold Joseph for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him then to Egypt. So, picture yourself as Joseph, the dreamer, God's dreamer, communicating God's dreams. And you're walking through all of these kinds of circumstances. You're in a cistern. Now you're traded off and you're brought to Egypt. So, the brothers go to their father Jacob. They take his coat, splash goat blood on it, told Jacob, their father, about it, that they found him and an animal must have killed him. Jacob, obviously, as his father, very upset. The Ishmaelites reach Egypt with Joseph. They then sell him again to Potiphar, who was one of Pharaoh's officials and a captain of the guard, which means a couple of things possibly. That he was either in charge of the royal prisoners or in charge of cooking in the royal court. So Joseph was in several new environments. He finds himself now under the leadership of Potiphar, and Joseph was very successful in that environment. You say, how in the world could all this happen to Joseph? Kind of like he's got a black cloud on him, but yet he's still able to be successful in this context and in this situation. Joseph knew, we learn in Genesis chapter 39, Joseph knew that God was the reason for his success, that his success did not come from his own power, from his own will, from his own purpose, from his own discipline, that all the glory goes to God, that God is the reason for his success. Genesis chapter 39, specifically verse 20 and 21, and chapter 41, verse 16. So the injustice, though, continues on Joseph's life. He later, as you know the story, some of you, he was accused of sexual impurity. So then he's now put in jail for what is a false accusation. So he experiences injustice. So through all of this, though, Joseph is somehow able to keep his head on straight. He did not let his circumstances dictate the direction and purpose for his life. He kept his head on straight. He focused on the character and direction of God for his life, no matter the circumstance he found himself in. As a result of this type of focus, he became governor at the age of 30 years old and led Egypt through a 7-year famine. Joseph was able to persevere through all of this. And as you get toward the end of his story, did he ever forgive his brothers? Would he ever have an opportunity to forgive? Would God ever cross their paths again? The answer is yes. And when he was face to face with his brothers, probably unlike you or me, with the strength of God and with the vertical perspective that he had. Remember his most famous quotes? What man meant for evil, God meant for good. With that type of perspective, with the strength of Almighty God, he was able to forgive his brothers. Joseph also forgave and had action behind his forgiveness. He embraced his brothers and wept over them. And not only did he forgive them, but then he blessed them and took care of them. So we're talking about big things this morning. Not about our dreams for our lives, but God's dream for our lives. And submitting to God's sovereign plan for our lives to accomplish those dreams. Graduating into God's dream for our life will cause us to encounter some dream stoppers along the way. Joseph had many of them. God's dream for Joseph was unstoppable. He went from the pits to second in command. So let's look at some of the potential dream stoppers in Joseph's life, and we'll draw application from it. Possible dream stoppers for Joseph that are also possible dream stoppers for us. Number one, tough circumstances. As we read specifically, to get specifically and specific and literal, Joseph made it through some very difficult circumstances. He was verbally abused by his brothers. A lot of hate was coming his way. As we said, he was thrown into a cistern by his brothers. He was sold to the Ishmaelites, sold to Potiphar, falsely accused, and then put in jail. All of those, I think we would all conclude, those are all difficult or tough circumstances. And so how does this list of difficult circumstances look as you observe the journey of your life? When you think about your journey, there's probably a whole list of difficult circumstances, aren't there? Tough, difficult. And you think, how in the world am I still here right now? How did I get through it? When you're in the moment, when you're in the middle of that difficult circumstance, probably all of us in the room will put our hands up and say, you know what? At that time, we thought we couldn't go another day. At that time, we thought we couldn't go another minute. But you know, like Joseph knew, with the strength of God, Holy Spirit empowerment in the believer, that we can get through anything. Let me show you a little bit of some fun pictures, kind of reminiscing and looking back. My first daughter Macy. We have some fun pictures of her as we think about her journey. So when she was born, she's now 11. She was born, here's a beautiful, peaceful picture, kind of like when Gene was holding his new little baby. With Macy in particular, she would get startled easily. So she could go from a peaceful, restful type state, and then a startle, a sharp noise, a crick in the wood, or who knows what, she'd be startled. Bath time. Remember those days? So bath time, not pleasant. Getting geared up for it here, little Macy. And you know, the baby's not going to like it, but we as parents, we got to get pretty aggressive. We got to get the job done. Got to clean our baby. So as we do that, you can see it's pretty uncomfortable for Macy. Reese, let's flip to the next slide. So, right, it's just like, life's over. I give up. I can't go another second through this process. And then we get the washcloth out. That gets worse. I mean, it's over. Throws the hands up. Why do you hate me? Right? But eventually she'll calm down. She's clean. She's good. Until she poo-poos again. We lay her down at night. The dogs are quiet. Right? Just so peaceful. At this point, we had Reese, a couple of years older than her. Reese, shh. We had a couple of dogs too, beagles. They don't listen. Shh. Everybody, stay quiet. She gets startled easily. Tiptoe. Amber would say things like, I need to check on her just to make sure she's breathing. No. We serve a sovereign God. God is holding her. If you go in that room, and even if you tiptoe, and no door is perfectly quiet, it's going to squeak. Something's going to happen. Something like this. It would happen time and time and time again. Oh, Macy, her journey. One of her teachers growing up is in the room. Macy, when she was 4 years old, had a breakthrough year. God used one of these teachers is in this room right now to do that. And here she's 11 years old now. And I remember back to that year, breakthrough. And I thank you for that breakthrough. So I think about, so we all have a journey filled with easy times, filled with startling times. So we need to ask ourselves some questions that we know we talk about all the time. We can't be circumstantially driven, driven by the character of God. Ask yourself, and I'm asking myself, these questions. Maybe you have been experiencing verbal or physical abuse. Are you going to let that stop God's dream for your life? So sadly, we all could probably say that there is suppression in our life somewhere. And maybe you're right in the middle of it. Maybe it's in your past. But Satan is using it to hold you down. He's using it to stop God's dream for your life. And maybe you feel like you've been thrown out into a cistern or left to be on your own. With the chances of you surviving and making it and thriving, it looks very dim. So are you going to let that type of circumstance, maybe it was way in the past, maybe it's recent, stop God's dream for your life? Maybe you feel like you've been sold out. Are you going to let that injustice, or whoever's talking behind your back, or whoever didn't come through with the promise that they promised you they would, are you going to let that stop God's dream for your life? Maybe you've been accused of something you didn't do. There's the injustice. Our world is full of circumstances that we would say that's not fair. And why do bad things happen to good people? And on and on and on. Are we going to let that injustice stop God's dreams and God's goals and missions for our life? Or maybe, like Joseph, You feel, he was in a literal jail cell. Maybe you feel like you're in a figurative jail cell where you feel trapped. You feel trapped. You feel held down. Are you going to let that stop God's dreams, who wants you to get out of there and thrive for him? Are you going to let that stop his goals for your life? To graduate into God's dreams for your life, you need to be and need to understand something clear this morning. That, number one, if God is for you, which he is, he's not against you, God is for you. See, we have all these tough circumstances happen. If we have a misinterpretation of who God is as revealed in his word, we may say, God, why are you against me? God, why are you punishing me? Or why are you making life difficult for me? Do you not like me? He loves you. He is for you. And if he is for you, who then can be against you? Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 that with Jesus, we will never be knocked out for the 10 count in boxing terms. That we will fall, but we'll always be able to get back up. That we can do all things through the strength of Jesus Christ. That even when life gets the best of us, we still don't lose. That for the follower of Jesus, the best is yet to come. That the end of end alls is supposed to be death, but that's actually just the beginning for us. So you need to ask yourself, what tough circumstances have I let stop God's dream for my life? And I need to make sure that I overcome that dream stopper. Number two, we need to look at ourselves as being our own potential dream stopper. We stop ourselves all the time. So Joseph did not kill God's dream for his own life. And he could have. He was very young. He was only 17 years old when he started receiving these dreams from God. He could have just turned away from that and said, I'm too young. I can't handle this. No way. Maybe I thought it was a dream from God. Maybe I thought it was God talking, but it couldn't be. I can't imagine leading at the age of 30 and all the decisions that need to be made there in Egypt. I'm too young. I don't have the experience. I'm going to fail. Don't we say that to ourselves all the time? He could have been his own worst enemy. Could have thought he was too young. He needed to quickly understand that God is bigger than age. Again, it had to be way beyond his comprehension, horizontally, humanly speaking, that he would be acting as governor of Egypt while consulting Pharaoh on major decisions at the young age of 30. The teaching lesson isn't just about doing big things for God at a young age, but it's also that God is big. He's bigger than age, period. So young or older or anywhere in between, God is bigger. But we sell ourselves short, don't we? We say things like, I can't do anything great for God. At this point in my life, maybe I could have before, or when all the stars aligned, or all my circumstances and all this was going, I could have done it then. But right now, I can't do anything anymore great for God. Basically, God can't use me anymore. Life's pretty much over. So I'm just going to kind of go through the motions. I'm just going to be okay with living a normal and an average life from here on out, because God can't use me anymore. He's not big enough. You know, too many of us get stuck in that mentality, stuck in normal, stuck in doing what culture expects of us instead of what God expects of us. Normal, what the secularists would say, what anybody from a horizontal point of view would say, you know, normal would be pursuing the American dream. I mean, that's normal. Normal, though, requires minimal risk for God. Normal is also dictated by the world, not God. Normal is logical and sometimes too logical, because it doesn't leave any room for the empowerment of the Holy Spirit and the plan of God. Normal is just expected. I mean, to be honest, normal, when you approach life saying, I'm just going to live a normal, average life, and I've been there before, is boring. It's not fun, Tim. It's just, okay, I'm just going to go through life the way I'm supposed to go through life. But last time I checked, the things of God were a little odd. They were anything but normal. When you look at it, building an ark when rain did not exist, splitting water for 1 million people to walk through it, raining down food, drinking from rocks, just looking at the Savior of the world being born in a manger, not normal. Walking on water, not normal. Raising the dead, not normal. Feeding thousands with just a value meal, not normal. Changing the world in 3 years, impossible. Conquering sin and death, impossible. And then trusting a few ordinary people with the hope of heaven. That's anything but normal. And Jesus didn't stop himself when you think about it. The Garden of Gethsemane, when he got alone with the Father, he says, is there any other way? God the Father, before I get arrested and get beat down and whipped and go to the cross, could there be a plan B? Can I write a proposal for plan B or C? But in his prayer, you notice he said, it's not about me, it's about you. I submit to your plan. From the human perspective, even though we don't get it, it doesn't make sense to us. The dots might not be connecting, but we trust you, Lord, with all that we are and all that we have. So I think it's time that we, like Jesus, get away from normal. And like John the Baptist too, get a little odd for God. And so we need to ask ourselves, am I the number one enemy of myself? You ask yourself that too. Are you the number one enemy of yourself? Your tough circumstances, you may have good circumstances, but you sell yourself short. You say, I can't do it. I'm too young or I'm too old. I don't have experience or whatever, fill in the blank. Let's go to our last dream stopper. Number three in Joseph's life, others. Others. Joseph did not let other people kill God's dream for his life, whether it be his own family or whether it be someone on the outside falsely accusing him. He said, I'm not going to let other people stop God's dream for my life. I'm going to go after those goals no matter what and see it to completion with the strength of God submitting to his sovereign plan. So are you, am I, are we allowing others to stop God's dream for our lives? This world is filled with negativity. Because of our sinful nature, we bend and we lean negative, don't we? A lot of times we as parents do, and we don't even mean to. Our kids will come home and they've been dreaming a little bit. Hey, I want to do, hey, what if I did this with my life? What do we do as parents sometimes? We suppress right away. I'm sure that's the smartest thing because you got to align your education and your experience and have enough money and have resources and get the house and marriage and all the family and then maybe go to Africa and do that. You see what I just did as a parent? Well, and maybe this other stuff needs to be discussed, but can we just celebrate that we got someone dreaming about God's dreams? Can we celebrate that we have someone saying, you know what? God has goals for me, and I want to go after those, and here's what it's beginning to look like. Can you help me get there? And then we have those appropriate conversations. We need to understand that when God communicates his dreams for us and we begin to process through those dreams and begin to communicate it to others, it's not all the time going to be well received. Whether it be family or whether it be friends, whether it be in the church or outside the church, it may be that people suppress that very thing that God has asked you to do. Like Jesus, like Joseph, let's make sure we expect that and let's persevere through it. A couple of questions as Diane comes up and we're going to conclude. Will you, will I go after God's dreams for our life? Graduates, literally, you're entering a new season in your life. Whether it be college or whether it be life beyond college in the professional world. All of us, as we're all graduating this morning, what is that next season? It may be summer, it may be a new season in the workplace, a new season in family, a new season in marriage, a new season, fill in the blank. As we approach that new season, are we willing to go after God's dreams for our life in the middle of that season and beyond? And what does that look like? And then secondly, will you overcome the dream stoppers that are coming your way? What would Satan love to do? He would love to stop you before you ever get started. Or if you're in the middle of it, he's going to try to discourage you. He's going to try to distract you. He's going to try to deflate you to get you what? To stop. Because why? The result is God-sized. For you and for others. The result is God-sized for you as you grow closer to Him, as you experience God in that walk and that journey that's going to be required because it's bigger than you, but also for others as His kingdom is advanced, as you bridge and share gospel with others. Listen, I would say this. Our culture won't know what to do with a church who has a handful of dreams and a heart full of God. What would that look like as those two collaborate? Specifically, here at UBC. Have we drifted? Are we still talking about seeking God and receiving word from Him and living it out in a God-sized way? How are we doing as a church in America? How are we doing as a church at large in the world? Let's do our best to lead the way in what that could look like here in East Orlando and beyond. Whether it be in our Spanish ministry, our college ministry, or right here in Bonnieville, and as God leads. Whether it be talking about God, provide a way out of the dumpster. We need more storage, mobile units. Or whether it be fill in the blank as God leads us over the next years. Let's stand up together. Diane, what are we going to be singing?
Number 537. He who began a good work in you.
Oh, I love it. That's perfect. 537. During this time, you'll see life cards in the back of the chairs.
And they're also... It's also...
Okay, perfect. We have the words up there. So this will be a time of response, a good time for prayer. If we prayed over graduates, and we're all graduating this morning, to lean over with your spouse next to you or your family or whoever you're sitting with, a good time to pray or talk about, hey, let's talk later about this. I would love to join in with you prayer if you want to come up here. If you want to make a spiritual decision, come up here. You let me know today, or you can let a leader here know before you leave, or you can fill out a life card and keep that private and make sure we get it so we can follow up. So as we graduate into God's dreams for our life, let's do business with Him right now and respond accordingly.